Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of March, Anno Domini 2012, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. It's 12:04, which doesn't rhyme, but here's our news of the day. Apple is hosting a media event this week where it is expected to unveil the latest version of its popular iPad tablet as it looks to thwart increasing competition from deep-pocketed rivals such as Amazon with their Kindle and Nook with their Barnes & Noble with their Nook Color and Nook tablet. This invitation-only event will be held on March 7th at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco, the same venue Apple used to unveil the last two iPads. Apple, which sent the invitation to reporters by email on Tuesday, did not divulge details of the event, but just said that, and I quote, "We have something you really have to see and touch." Last time I got it, never mind. The invitation also featured a partial picture.
What was their name?
Yeah, exactly. The invitation also featured a partial picture of a device resembling the iPad. The third iteration of a device that has helped put pressure on the demand for traditional laptops and computers is expected to boast a faster quad-core processor and a higher definition screen. Some analysts and industry experts also expect 4G wireless capability, ensuring the iPad remains current as cutting-edge broadband technology gains momentum. One of the problems Apple will face is that if rumored resolution of the new iPad is true, downloading one high-definition image will likely put you over your data plan.
Let me repeat
that. Downloading one high-definition image, will likely put you over your data plan.
Not a movie, an image.
Yeah, just an image.
Picture.
Yeah. Well, you get 2 gig or 4 gig, and some of these high-def pictures, particularly at the resolutions that... the new iPad 3 will, another rumor is the iPad 3 will officially be called the iPad HD. Which of these rumors will be true? Well, we'll see soon. If you download one picture, it's going to be more than 3 gig or 4 gig. All right, so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is the iPad 3. And your choices are, woo, can't wait. Will it be under $100? And I'm happy with my Etch-a-Sketch. Thanks. Predictably, 44 votes are in and 64% of you are happy with your Etch-a-Sketches. I don't know why you listen to this show, considering you're most comfortable with paper, pencil, and Etch-a-Sketch, but we're happy to have you as listeners.
Well, I'd like to see the 3 come out so the 2 will come down, hopefully, in price, and grab
a 2. Well, that would be nice.
Because anyway, 2 would do me good.
Well, exactly. 1 would do you for most of what you're
Yeah,
do.
True.
The, I'll talk about other rumors after I talk about the opinion poll. When you're done with choosing the poll, you'll have more to say. So if you look at the yellow box underneath the poll, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It'll take you to a truly wonderful website where you will see the opinion poll of the week, which is how do you feel about the new iPad 3? And so far, only a few people have talked about it. And, of course, that's our question to you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. That number again, 585-966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. So give us a call, and we will be happy to talk to you about this. The iPad 3, the other rumor is that it will not have Siri, which apparently is reserved for the iPhone, apparently. I don't know if I think of that as a mistake. But, of course, these are all rumors. We don't know a dang thing, at least until the 7th, when maybe we'll be talking about... The new iPad HD or the new iPad 3 or...
Well, Steve was alluding to it last week. You know, he's thinking, what, a better the camera. And that's why I was also quizzing him, right now you get the 8, the 16, and the 32. And we're sitting there just blue skying and saying, why not do 32, 64, and 128?
Well, with the higher resolution of the screen, you're going to want more RAM to download and more stuff.
And flash memory is so cheap.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, again, you get the advantage of no moving parts.
Yep.
And it's just there, use it.
Well, we'll see. We'll go to our first caller. I believe it is our friend Dennis from Rochester, New York. Dennis, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's up?
But before I ask you my question, I just want to say about your polls. I feel compelled when you do the polls to answer give you the answer that's the most ridiculous one. I do that every time. Just for
I suspect many people do, Dennis.
Guilty.
For a long time, I used to record your show on cassette tape, and for lots of reasons, it's not practical to do that anymore. So my question is there any way I can record your show and then look at it or listen to it on my desktop and do what I can do with a cassette tape, that is, stop it, start it, rewind it, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. There are actually two ways to do that.
We've been doing it for quite a few years.
Right. One is to download the archives.
Okay.
And that's at soundbites.org. And again, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can just go there and look at the archives and download whatever show you want and play it at your leisure, with whatever product you want to use. And most of those have a start-stop button, right? So you can do that fairly easily. You can also record it yourself because we stream it live. So if you have a program like Total Recorder, you can do that. And then there's also a third way right from the show, and I don't actually know how to do that. There's at least two different ways to do that. And since we're doing the work, the nice thing about the version that we normally put out, and my hope, of course, is that as a friend of the show, Chris Reich, is recording the show today because we don't have Steve with us at the moment.
And we don't have the camera. I was also going to mention, if folks are trying to find us with the live camera, they're not going to see us there
right.
either.
But most of the time, when we have when Steve is in the studio, he records it right off the board. So it's a cleaner copy than you will get over the internet. And so downloading the archives, which hundreds and hundreds of people do every week all over the world. It's a free download. Just go to our website and click on...
Okay, well, now I got that part, but if I listen to it, say, with Windows Media, but I listen to part of it now and I want to come back tomorrow and listen to another part of it, start where I last left off, how do I do that? Do I have to keep Windows Media Player open that time? And
yes, you would, yes. Mm-hmm. There's no way around that I know of.
Yeah, no.
There's no way, because I shut, I restart my computer daily. There's no way I can...
If you put it in a music player device like an iPod or an Android device or whatever, usually if you close that and do something else and come back, it's in the same place.
It remembers like your CD player.
Right.
If you have a CD in the car, you stop at a certain part in a song,
right.
You get back in your car, and it resumes right where you left
right.
off.
So you would need a device like that to do it. The standard devices don't. The only other thing to do would be to write down the minutes and do it that way.
Well, that's not out of the question, but it sounds like I'm going to have to get into the 20th century, not even the 21st century, but the 20th yeah. century, and get myself an iPod or something.
Right, and then the third way is with DAR.fm. If you go there, you can record the show live as well.
Okay.
So, the reality is you're going to have to get some form of device, like an iPod or an Android device that will... Or a Sanyo music player or any one of those things, that when you turn it off, it remembers where you were. But those are specialized devices as opposed to something available on your computer.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure.
Bye.
I think I've said this before. I turned off. When I bought my new phone, I took my old phone and turned off the radios.
I turned it into a music player,
and I call it my iPod because it's an Android device. And the battery lasts for freaking ever weeks and weeks, because this is a battery that's designed to run radios 24/7, and it lasted an entire day. So now all it's doing is whenever I play music, it's running the music player. And so it lasts forever. I'm very, very impressed. I've turned off all the radios. I can turn on the radio when I want to when I want to play something or download new content, whether it's podcasts or, I move music over from my computer. But most of the time, the radios are off, so the battery just lasts forever.
It works a lot faster, or longer, I should say. I'm sorry. It's just handy. You know, like I say, why throw out a good device, and you can put it to use like that, and especially the battery life on these phones, they're just getting longer and longer and longer anyway, so instead of it just becoming a paperweight, what the heck, go for that and get double use out of it.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's what I've done, and it's great. I mean, it has everything I want to do. If I want to add apps back into it, I could. Well, I don't, but I could.
Well, I was going to say, if you wanted to, like one of the apps that you wanted to get that they have for the portable radio stations, like say an iHeart or something like that, you could have that app there just in case you want to change it up a little bit. You could turn on.
Well, I do have those there, and I could turn them on if I wanted to.
Yeah, and then
I can't listen to them in the car like I can with my real phone, but anywhere where I'm at with Wi-Fi, which is dang near everywhere.
That's the one thing I love. Even though I got that 2 gig data plan, very seldom do I even eat up part of my 2 gig, because literally wherever I go, there's free Wi-Fi.
Yep,
and I just tap into that.
Yeah, it's great.
I eat my minutes or my, not in this case the minutes, but a data plan.
Right.
But not that I even, just suck it up off of the head. It's so handy.
Exactly.
It saves me quite a bit.
Exactly. All right, our next caller is Russ from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Russ, what's up?
Great. Thanks, guys, for taking my call. Basically, I have a laptop and a Droid phone question. Basically, I'm in one of those areas where there's not a lot of wireless connections. I do have unlimited data download on my Droid, though. And I was wondering, is there a free way I can connect my laptop to my phone without buying one of those add-on packages through my phone provider?
Not legally, no.
Mm-mm.
There are hacks that are available. You'd have to hack your Droid phone.
Yeah.
You'd have to root it, as they call it. And you could do it that way, but in order to do it legally, you do have to have whatever the package is that comes from your provider, I'm afraid.
And, you don't want to get into that because, again, you're breaking something and there's no guarantee, especially on phones. Granted, you might have this particular phone and that phone, but even within phones, just like computers, there could be a model difference, a version, one circuit board versus another. And it might have been developed for this particular phone, but that model of circuit board in there, and all you have to do is make one change, and then all of a sudden that patch that or you're jailbreaking it might not work, and it'll mess up your phone, and then they're going to know it when you try to go back and say, hey, my phone's not working, what'd you do to it?
Yeah,
and they're
going to
know.
Yeah, if you brick your phone, nobody's going to help you.
Done that before. All right, well, thanks, guys. You guys have a great show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Russ.
Bye-bye.
And I know you don't have a lot of coverage out there in Batavia way. There's really, and it's kind of sad, but there are areas of the city that are the state.
Yeah.
Particularly down toward the southern tier and west of Rochester.
Well, it's funny because you go down like Canandaigua.
Yeah.
And there's coverage all over the place.
Yep.
But you go over to the west, to Batavia, and like you're saying, it's kind of sparse. And it's like,
Well, they'll build all those out as time goes on.
Oh, yeah.
They have a real dichotomy right now, a real problem, which I alluded to in our first story, which is that we've got all these devices that are data hungry, and yet our carriers are saying, well, you can't have any data because it's too much. It's too much for our phones. AT&T is still throttling. Verizon throttles too, but they do it differently. AT&T throttles when you hit the top 5%. The problem is, how are you going to know where the top 5% is on any given week, because they average it out over a week, right? So that's a problem. Verizon does it if you hit a congested cell tower and you're in the top 5%, they'll throttle you a little bit in order to keep that particular tower from being overdone. But listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with me, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites right here on Member Supported. And remember that term, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. You can call us at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Before you go on to the next story there, sticking with the iPads again.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and we've had this discussion before. I think, and you're going to see it more over the summer. Here's the question. With the iPads and that coming, and, you know, kids going to school, do you think these tablets are actually going to replace laptops at school?
Well, yes.
You being in a school, I figured I'd throw that question out to you and get your perspective.
Well, remember, there are three levels of school, and a lot of people are giving them to grammar school kids. Excuse me, elementary school kids, how old I am.
I'll say college.
We used to call them elementary schools.
Yeah.
Elementary school kids are getting them. High school kids in a couple places are getting them. College kids, it's an interesting thing, and this is one of the things that we're struggling with right now. The big problem remains publishers. Not every publisher's textbooks, and I'm talking about textbooks now,
mm-hmm.
not regular reading material,
okay.
right? Not just your potboilers or your thrillers or your romance novels. I'm talking about textbooks.
Okay.
Not a lot of them are available yet in an ebook format.
Mm-hmm.
For Christmas, we got my daughter the low-end Nook, the $79 Nook.
Just for reading.
Well, she's a theater major, so all the works of Shakespeare, you know, there's a 25-pound book that is now in this little thing, plus
yeah.
everything else that she can find. Get a lot of plays, a lot of stuff for that. So for her, it works out well. But for science in particular, with all the graphs and charts and pictures and that stuff, it's getting easier, but it isn't there yet. Now, there are two main and one, oh, my God, I wish I were main platform. There's the Kindle platform.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Nook platform. And there's the iBooks platform. So that's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Smashmouth has a bunch of stuff available. Powell's has a bunch of stuff available. But those are less textbooks than regular reading books. iTunes has an awfully, awfully nice, iBook rather, has an awfully nice concept, which is that when a book is specially crafted for iBook,
mm-hmm.
right? You can have video in it and audio and pictures that you can blow up and move around, and you can do 3D models and you can do all this kind of stuff. That's very, very, very new, like just a month or two old. So if you get iAuthor and iBook, you can do stuff. Open University has a bunch of stuff in iBook, although most of it is from the old version of iBook, which was really just audio and video. It was kind of like podcasts.
Okay.
So the stuff that's really designed for the new capabilities of iBook are slim at the moment. But if publishers get on the bandwagon,
mm-hmm.
holy moly, what a great concept that is.
Well, all right, to throw another spin at you, just to keep you on your toes.
Thank you.
All right, as far as, not as far as getting the textbook, but say as far as doing, having a tablet like that to say do homework and other research for papers and all that type of stuff.
Now, there's an interesting problem. I have said all along, and in fact, Apple is telling me the same thing, that the iPad is a consumer device, not a creator device. And as much as they want it to be in the classroom, every time I ask them, they tell me it's not an enterprise product, it's a consumer product. So, for example, we have trouble with some of their products on our wireless network because we use WPA2 Enterprise.
Okay.
The newer iPads work fine, so they're moving in that direction.
Okay.
But the point is that it's difficult to create good spreadsheets, good PowerPoint-type slides, good documents on an iPad. You absolutely need an external keyboard. There is no way to have an external mouse. So, you know, there's some trade-offs there. What we're finding works best, and we had 2 years ago a pilot program, and last year, I guess, a super pilot program, and this year we're just rolling stuff out. But we find it works best to create at your desk and deploy on your iPad. So, for example, our faculty will create their PowerPoint slides
mm-hmm.
at their desk and then send them to the iPad to show in class.
Oh, okay.
So you can be in class with your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some nice things being done that simply don't work in the enterprise, but work in some places. For example, you can now buy projectors, you know, the overhead, not the overheads where you put a piece of paper on a table, but the projectors.
The ones up on the ceiling.
There are projectors now that will act as Apple access points, the Apple Air.
Air stations? Where you can, network connections. You can
Wireless connection. So you can connect right to that and send your video signal directly to projector, and then you can walk around class with your device showing stuff on the screen. Now, that does not work at our place because we have a special version of the Cisco routers that kill extraneous signals. So if you try to run your own access points, you know, many Macs will, for example, run an access point.
Right, right.
It kills them because we have a lot of rogue students who really want to break
I'm shocked.
Into the net.
Those sweet little kids are at that institute.
So those simply will not ever work. They'll work for a few minutes and then they die because they're just killed by the network.
Okay.
That's actually a feature when you're in an environment like ours. So we're very happy with that one. That's a problem if you want to project in the classroom, right? The only other way to do it is with something along the lines of a product like SplashTop, which lets you take over your desktop with your iPad. The problem there, of course, remains now you've got to have two devices you're bringing into the classroom, your laptop to plug into whatever you want to your overhead, and your iPad, which then runs SplashTop. So there's a distinct problem when it comes to that stuff. It isn't really ready for prime time yet.
Well, that's why I was wondering. You know, the kids could have, you know, say a computer back, a regular desktop at their dorm to do all this stuff, and then, like you say, suck it on over to this tablet and be toting that around.
Well, I was talking from the professor's point of view.
Okay.
From the student's point of view,
that's the other
except
side.
For the problem of the textbooks, which still exist,
right.
An iPad is terrific for taking quick notes, you know, and again, when you're younger and you're not yet worried about carpal tunnel syndrome, typing on that thing is fine. So if you have the ability to do that, to type well enough, really.
Mm-hmm.
You can take notes. I have students in many of my classes, one or two so far, and I'm teaching in a technical college, right? Because I'm actually teaching over in the Golisano College. I'm teaching networking students.
Oh, okay.
And so I still only have one or two with an iPad right now. I expect to see that grow because it is so convenient. The real question is, how do you take notes well? On a device like that, and that's being worked on now. There is a great product that I love there's one called Evernote, and there's another one whose name I can't remember. With Evernote, you save all your data in the cloud, right, on Evernote servers.
Okay.
So your notes are available on your desktop, through a browser or through the app on the iPad, right, or an Android device.
Right.
And one of the things that you can do is while you're typing, it can also record the session. You can even take pictures to add in. So you can record the entire lecture at the same time you're taking notes.
And take pictures.
And you can even take pictures if you want to. That's available up on the Evernote website if you want to do it on your desktop.
So if he had something up on the blackboard that you wanted to capture, you could grab that.
Not a problem. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of college student use, that's a pretty nice product. It's available for both iPad and Android.
Okay.
And everything I'm saying about the iPad is true for the Android as well, of course.
I mean, it's
tablet in general.
Right. We're just talking tablets.
Right. Although there is a program for the iPad, Steve may know the name, I don't, where as you take notes, it actually time syncs with the audio. The problem is that audio is not readable through anything else but that program. I haven't yet found a program that'll also read that
translator,
audio.
Translator.
So, but in general, it's the concept is pretty cool, and we're seeing more and more students bring tablets into the classroom. But still, it's a trickle.
Like I say, they're just so thin, and like I say, I just see, especially with the cloud computing, you know, to be able to just grab your notes that are up on the cloud. Grab those and make any adjustments that you have to and be able to.
Yep. And one thing that Apple has done that Android has not is they've got a product like iBooks, where you can buy the, you can download for free the Kindle app and the Nook app for either platform.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen it.
But if your textbooks are an iBook, you're pretty much on an iPad. You're done.
Yeah.
So, and Apple is aggressively pursuing textbook publishers, but textbook publishers are still living in the 19th century. You buy a book that costs you $200 because there's color illustrations and, you know, plates and blah, 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 blah. And students can't figure out why that shouldn't only cost like $20. Well,
yeah.
No, you know, there are realities that it should cost more, but certainly it should cost less than the physical textbook.
Yeah, you would think, yes.
Yeah, and
you're saving all those trees and paper and ink.
And ink and the actual production of the book.
Distribution.
And the storage of the book and the distribution of the book and yada, yada, yada. And you're paying for a lot of middlemen when you buy a book in a store.
Yeah,
a lot of middlemen. And, well, even with potboilers and thrillers and romance novels, people are beginning to question. If you don't have to print it and distribute it and store it and have a salesperson sell it to me, why is it still $15?
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
You know, if all I'm paying is the publisher. Hello, you all right? If all I'm paying is the publisher and the author.
Even if you were to take it down to 10, people would at least feel that they're getting somewhat of a deal.
Well, if I can buy a paperback for $7 or $8.
Right.
Why shouldn't I be able to buy an audio, not an audiobook, an iBook, an ebook for
half the price.
$5, $4.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yes. No, I agree.
And this is the question people have. If the only people I'm paying are the author and the publisher, why is it so expensive?
True.
Now, the publisher does have to store it, but they're storing ridiculously minimal amounts of
nowadays,
text.
That's the way most.
It's a few K. It's really all it is.
Peanuts.
And, yeah, exactly. You can't buy, even if you were buying them straight up for a computer, a regular desktop instead of a server, which is where you would put them.
Right.
You couldn't buy a drive small enough for that to be a problem in any appreciable amount of time.
Mm-mm.
So the reality is that people are starting to question all of that, and I think the industry is going to change significantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Smash Mouth sells cheap books. Powell sells cheap books. Lots of people are self-publishing now. You can buy books for 99 cents on Amazon. And Barnes & Noble. A majority of them are crap, but many of them are actually very, very good.
This, too, will change in time.
Well, exactly right. Well, when you can self-publish, you will see a lot of crap. That's simply a fact.
Yes.
But the point is that there are major publishers doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are major people doing the same thing. In the video world, Louis C.K., do you know the comic?
Oh, yeah.
Louis C.K.? He did an entire concert, stand-up comedy concert, the sort of thing you would see on HBO, and offered it for $5 on his website. Within 3 days, he'd made $1 million. Now, he's already a name, right? I mean, I get that. He's a name already. But the reality is that when he offered it that cheap, and no DRM, no restrictions at all.
Oh, really?
So if you wanted to give it to your friend, you could.
Pass it on,
but
no copyright?
No, it was copyrighted. He just didn't restrict it.
Oh, okay.
Right? He didn't prevent you from copying it. He just said, he said, do not share this. Please respect the fact that I have a copyright. You get a copy because you paid $5. Ask your friend to pay $5 too.
Oh,
it's not that much money. That's the difference between restricting copying and copyright.
Oh,
copyright means he still owns the copyright, but restricting means I'm preventing you from copying it as opposed to trusting you as a human being. And as it turns out, like I said, he made $1 million in just a few days. So the reality is that people are willing to be honest when it's cheap enough. I guess there's a way to put that. I suppose I shouldn't, but that's the way I'm putting it. All right, we're going to take a break. Be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, and a special guest when we return with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Hey! The Lost Musketeer.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We should mention that the webcam is up now that Steve is here, and we'll have a partial recorded show.
And hopefully Chris has been recording the beginning bit, and you've got a backup copy at your office. If only Victor DeGrees wasn't such a long drive, I almost want to say if only store didn't get so busy and I couldn't leave, but I like the store being busy.
That's a good right. That's a good issue to have.
Right. So we've been talking about textbooks, and Steve corrected me. It's not Smash Mouth. That's a band. It's Smash Words. That's the ebook site, Smash Words. I apologize to both the site and the band for confusing them.
They're not confused. You were.
Well, exactly. Steve is putting links up even as we speak, so that people will not be as confused as I was.
Oh, well, both of us. I sat there and agreed with you, and I've heard of Smash Mouth before.
Yeah.
I've heard the band.
I knew it was wrong as I was saying it. I just knew it. Dag nabbit.
So in the car on the way here, first caller, you start out with an Apple news story, and the first caller was about my podcast. It always happens when yeah. I'm running late. He was using Windows Media Player to play audio files, and it doesn't remember your playback position when you start it again.
This is Dennis, by the way.
You can use a different player. There's M Player and VLC and a bunch of different audio players, or even iTunes. You can tell iTunes it does it by default for podcasts and for books, but you can tell iTunes to remember the playback position so that it will always remember where you stopped and then pick up where you left off automatically.
Nice feature.
We have somebody that called in or texted in about the tablet, and they're saying here, tablet versus laptop. I want a fully functional laptop with a hard drive with a detachable screen that has its own flash memory and is a tablet on its own.
Lenovo had one of those.
I know that I know they have tablets with detachable keyboards, but lacking hard drive. Any word on a company producing one? Thanks, KC from Rochester.
We're starting to see those come out. There are a couple out there that are something along that line where you can...
The Asus Transformer, one of those?
The Asus Transformer, it's always a tablet. It's still not a... What I think he's looking for is something that's in, say, Windows or Linux or whatever when mm-hmm. it's docked, and then you undock the screen, and it becomes a tablet in Android or Windows or iPad or whatever. Those don't really exist yet. There are things like the Asus Transformer and the Transformer Prime where you get what looks like a complete laptop. It's still an Android tablet. So you still have all the Android stuff and you don't have Word or PowerPoint, but you have a couple of different Office alternatives that come with it. You can use Google Docs online, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when you want to, you can simply detach the screen and it becomes an Android tablet.
The Lenovo X series, ThinkPad X series does this. I remember they showed it at CES 2 years ago and everyone was excited about it. It's the screen is a tablet with its own processor and its own memory. You dock it to the keyboard. Basically, has a better processor. Like the screen has an Atom in it, and the keyboard has a Core whatever in
nice.
It. List price $1,900.
Well, exactly. You're buying two devices.
Well, yeah. Ironically, the list price is $1,900, and on the Lenovo website, you can buy it for $1,000.
Nice.
But the list price is $1,900.
Very, very nice.
Then they have a multi-touch version. They have an outdoor version, which apparently is more rugged.
Now, does it detach, or does it swing around and lay flat over the...
I think this is the one that actually detaches. Hmm. But they do have one that detaches. Yeah, this may be just the one that swings around.
Yeah.
They do have one that detaches. Let me see if I can find the model number on that. Or the big thing, CES, before the iPad came out,
right.
CES had hundreds of tablets. Literally hundreds of tablets were shown. And then the iPad came out in March, and nobody shipped any of their tablets.
Right.
Because they were
afraid of Apple.
They were afraid of Apple, especially at the $500 price point.
Mm-hmm.
But this Lenovo, I think it had an X. It had an X in the name because X's are cool.
X's are cool.
Yeah. Means serious.
Yeah. And that was one of the more popular convertibles where it actually was two separate devices. And when you plugged the screen back into the keyboard, it synced your... websites you were on, your histories you were on, and actually did work as two separate devices with a faster processor in the keyboard version.
That's very nice.
Yep.
The Asus Transformer, as I said, is only one device. It's only an Android tablet. But what the nice thing I like about that is that in the keyboard is a second battery. that recharges the main battery.
Oh,
in the
yeah,
tablet.
You were saying
so
that.
So you can use it for 8 hours as a tablet and then plug mm-hmm. it in and use it for another mm-hmm. 8 hours, and you're good
to go.
Or you can just plug it in and it'll recharge it for you. So
it's the Lenovo IdeaPad U1 Hybrid. It keeps getting announced at CES, but I don't think they're actually shipping it yet.
Yeah, I don't think they are either. There's a lot of stuff going on in that, if what yep. you say is true, and I don't think they're there yet.
One other quick one. Jim just had another one question here. The camera is up.
The camera's up.
Camera's up, so you can, because he was wondering, wave to the audience. I'll just flash my bald spot.
Well, yeah, and your butt.
And we're seeing your butt. It's still there. It's just behind the hands now. But that's so there's just a lot of stuff going on. The big thing is what we want is informed by science fiction, frankly, and what we have isn't there yet. You know, we used to joke about the tablet that Adama had in the original Battlestar Galactica, where he would talk to it and perfectly formed text would appear.
Yep.
Then we got Dragon Dictate, but it was only on a desktop and a high-end one at that. Now you can get Dragon Dictate for a tablet. And so
yep.
we're getting there. We're just not quite where you want to be yet.
And a lot of the shows had little tiny thin tablets. Star Trek had their pad, PADD. In fact, we're a little surprised Paramount didn't sue Apple when they came out with the iPad, because they had a pad earlier.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
The data cubes that,
right.
that everything came from Star Trek. And there's been a lot of shows on Science Channel and History Channel about people watching science fiction as a kid and then growing up and making those things.
One of the interesting things that I really found fascinating about the new Star Trek movie is they were talking to the designers. They said it was really, really tough
yep.
to keep the Star Trek feel and yet not make it look dated, because the Star Trek feel is what we carry around today. Our cell phones are from the communicators, and our pads are from the pad, and yep. our data cube, our SD cards are from the data cubes. And you know, how far do they go while keeping the Star Trek feel
yeah.
and yet not making it look like something from the 60s?
That was the big thing that the Star Trek Enterprise series problem had with Scott Bakula. It was supposed to be 100 years before Kirk, but it had been 40 years of our time later, and the technology was so much better in making the TV show.
No, I'm going to do you guys even more better. You sit there and talk about Star Trek, which is the 60s. Now, I'm going to go back even farther to the 50s with Dick Tracy, and he'd sit there walking around with his wristwatch that he could sit there and talk to people.
Two-way wrist radio.
Yes. I mean, hello.
And they always pointed to it every time with a little arrow. Two-way wrist radio.
Yeah. And I mean, you want to talk about futuristic thinking. Now, that is really futuristic.
Yep.
Because back then, I mean, phones, that's back when we had party lines.
That's right.
You know, and rotary dial.
You pick up the phone and say, hey, Mabel, connect me with Tommy over in the barbershop.
All right,
now you pay extra to get conference calling.
Yeah, right.
Before it was free.
What it is, exactly.
You can sit there and listen on a party line and know what was going on in the neighborhood and everything else, whether you wanted to or not.
Yep.
I mean, Dick Tracy, though, was even way before Star Trek, and it's come to fruition. I mean, we're walking around with devices now that are so thin and small, and you can communicate, two-way communication.
And when little radios, portable radios came out on the Dick Tracy comics, they then went to two-way wrist TVs. And now we have FaceTime and Tango and Skype and all of that stuff.
It's already there.
It's already there. So it's pretty amazing how we're catching up.
Steve, when did Dick Tracy actually start coming out? I'm just curious, because I know it's easily the 50s, because I remember.
No, 30s.
I'm saying I remember it from the 50s, but I'm wondering when he started with the wrist radio and that. Because
October 1931.
31. There you go.
There you go. Rest my case.
There's a series on the Science Channel, The Prophets of Science Fiction, hosted by Ridley Scott, strangely enough.
Yeah.
And they've been doing, we watched Robert Heinlein the other night, and they did Jules Verne, and who did submarines and moon trips, and Isaac Asimov, who predicted robots, and H.G. Wells and time travel. All of these early science fiction authors that predicted the future in their science fiction, and kids reading that in the 30s and 40s made a lot of the movies in the 50s and 60s, and the technologies in the 70s and 80s. The one on Philip K. Dick was interesting. He was a really tortured soul.
Yeah, he really was. You know where the word taser comes from, don't you?
Mm-mm.
Thomas A. Swift's electric rifle. Tom Swift.
Tom Swift. Mm-hmm. I read Tom Swift when I was a kid.
I read Tom Swift when I was a kid, too.
Same here.
Great series.
Yeah.
Tom Swift, and when the guy created, he was reading a book from his childhood. He was looking and thinking, why couldn't we build this? And so he did and called it Thomas A. Swift's electric rifle, the taser. That's where the name came from.
I think I actually was reading Tom Swift Jr. by that time.
Yeah, you probably were. Tom Swift was
1910.
I was about
to say.
When
you were a kid.
Thank you.
Ooh.
We weren't on the radio, the things I would say to him. I had all the Tom Swift Jr. books.
Encyclopedia Brown.
The original ones, though, were like Tom Swift and his electric motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, that stuff that just was not
there.
Available in the day. And it was just that far ahead, you know, just that little bit far ahead.
Just a little bit.
You can buy electric motorcycles now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't yet.
When are you going to get yours?
There's a new company. Well, the problem is the length of the ride, right?
The
I mean, you still only get 30 miles.
Mm-hmm.
30 to 50 miles. 30 to 50 miles is pretty good.
Then it's
an overnight charge.
Mm. Yeah,
right. So if you're going to go 100 miles, it's going to take you 2 days.
The recharging time is something that has to really get worked on.
We do, you know, on a normal poker run, we do 100 mile stretches, you know, just going from one to the other on some good long ones.
Right, right. And so until they fix that, it's an electric scooter, something to get you around town.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
Right. For short errands, you go to the market, whatever you're
doing. The Vespas. I still like the Vespas.
Love the Vespa.
There is a group that goes around Rochester. Excuse me. I'll never forget this. It was a year or so ago. And I'm down on Park Avenue. And I hear, you know, and this whining. And I just turn and look. I'm coming down the street. There's one, two. I start counting them. And there was like 30 some odd Vespas.
Yep.
And they all go around cafe hopping.
Yep.
And they go from one coffee shop to the other. And I saw them one other time up on Java Joe's, up on Gibbs Street.
Yep.
And they lined it.
They line up all the Vespas just like they were motorcycles.
Yeah, you can do it like dominoes. If you hit one, they were all going to go down.
Hex angels, born to be mild.
Yeah. But that was so cool to see them all bopping around in their little Vespas and having a ball for the evening. It was a nice summer night. And
when we camped, we would see people with Vespas on the back of their campers. You know, and you park and you get on your Vespa and you go wander around the area and see what the sights are and come back. But again, if you're going to do that with an electric, you need a better battery. Now, there's a guy who says he's got a better battery, and he's starting to build it. He says it's 300 miles for a car. So for, I don't know how big it is, how heavy it is, how long it takes to recharge, yada, 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 right? We don't know any of that nonsense yet. But he says it's 300 mile battery. And if that's true and it recharges quickly enough, that's something that will take you a decent distance. Now, you know, it's still not going to get me to my daughter's college 1,100 miles away in a day. But it's getting there. Again, we're a step short of where we want to be all the time. You know?
There's a lot of research being done in ultra capacitors.
Right. Triple layer, quadruple layers.
Because they can be charged in a couple of minutes.
Right.
And then discharged over hours.
Right.
The big danger is then instead of having like a 12-volt battery in your car that discharges, you know, in 5 minutes. Yeah, something like a Prius or a Tesla has 300 or 400 typical laptop batteries.
Right.
This ultracapacitor, it would have to store 100,000 volts, you know, ridiculous high charge to be able to trickle it out over time. But then you could recharge it in a couple of minutes.
Right. And that's what they're looking at. So the question becomes, how do they make that safe enough to put in a car?
Yeah. Someone has said if they tried to design a car today, it would never pass safety measures because you're carrying 20 gallons of highly volatile explosive fuel.
Exactly right. Well, that music tells me something. Tells me that Dave went and raided the library again. It also tells me that we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. While you're listening to what goes on during the break, feel free to give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we will be right back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
That missing voice.
4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Don't forget, you can give us a call. The number, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. That's 966-5299 or 1-800-790-0415. So call us and join in the fun. In the meantime,
we got something else to talk about.
We have something else to talk about.
And that being?
Well, you know, next Saturday.
What are you doing next Saturday?
I'm planning on getting up early.
Earlier because, than you normally do?
Yes, I'm getting up a little early. Well, Saturdays I try to sleep
dark 30.
Saturdays I try to sleep until there's, you know, until the sun begins to peep over the horizon.
A
not
rooster.
In the winter, but in the summer at least. Right, I do not wake up the rooster on Saturdays. But next Saturday, I believe I'm going to get up early, and I think because I'm going to be hungry.
Really?
I got to find some place that has, I don't know, what do I like? I like pancakes, I like sausage, I like juice, I like coffee. I need to be somewhere that
but
has
you know what?
Those things.
You know what? We can
what?
Even throw in some music for you.
What?
Yes.
You have a place?
Yes, we do. For the second annual pancake breakfast right here at Grease Olympia High School, 1139 Maiden Lane. You can come and enjoy the polka guys and get all those amenities that you were asking for, along with, it doesn't stop there.
Holy moly.
Giveaways, and we got some raffles going on.
Yeah, but see, I don't really want to spend $25 or $30 to do this.
You don't have to.
I don't even want to spend $15.
No, we'll get it done lower than that.
$10?
We'll cheaper than that.
$8.
No, let's go a little bit lower.
$7.99.
How about $5?
Can you afford that? Holy moly, $5? Wait a minute, let me get this straight.
Yep.
All the pancakes I can eat.
Yes.
All the sausage I can eat.
Mm-hmm.
All the coffee I can drink.
You can have sausages hanging out both ears.
If I want. Thank you. There's not. Somebody will take a picture of that. I don't think they'll want that. Plus, I get all kinds of polka music. Plus, I get the Sound Bites guys wandering around chit-chatting with us. Plus, there's raffles and giveaways and stuff, and I get all of that for just $5?
Yes.
Well, how do I get this ticket?
Well, all you got to do is show up next Saturday here at 10 o'clock. The doors are going to open, and it's going to go from 10 to 1. Nick, Steve, and I will be floating around, like he said, from around 10 to probably
11:30,
because then we got to wander back down here to the studio to do the show. But we will be wandering around while Ray and Al do their polka show from 10 to 12 live right there in the cafeteria. And last year, we even had people dancing in the aisles.
We had people dancing in the aisles. The fun part for me, although I do love polka music, the fun part for me was chatting with our fans who showed up.
Yes.
Sitting with them and chit-chatting for a while was great. That was the best part for me.
Yeah, we can just sit around and have a good time. And like I said, all the food, you know, juice, pancakes, coffee, sausage that you can consume, you know, it's there for a mere $5. And kids 5 and under get in for free.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, it's a great family day. You know, granted the weather isn't, you know, it's getting better. But it's still, you know, it is still considered winter.
My wife is saying that the spring flowers are coming out.
Oh, my crocuses
the
are already
The geese are coming back.
Yeah.
In the fall, I hate that sound, that high, lonely sound of the geese honk in the air. But in the spring, I love hearing it.
I got to admit, you know what I did this week?
What? Got the bike ready.
Well, we went over just to make sure it was going to turn over.
Idiot!
It's ready to go.
It's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
just
tell
had
you,
to get the tractor out of the way, which I haven't used much.
Right. Well, you've had it on the triple charge all winter, right?
Yeah. Okay. But one thing I can probably tell folks, it's probably not going to snow, only from the standpoint I had to go get new chains. I blew out one of the chains in my tractor.
Uh-huh.
So I quick rushed, got another set of chains, got it jacked up, and I found the trick to that, too. You got to let the air, some air out of the tire.
Yeah.
You get the chain on.
And then fill the tire
and then
up
you can
again.
Fill the tire back out and mm-hmm. stay. But because now I have the chains on there and I'm all set to go.
You haven't used it once.
We haven't. So, yeah. Folks, you can thank me
you.
For
appreciate it.
No snow, and I'm saving money on calcium chloride.
Absolutely appreciate it. Thank you so
you
much.
You know, and it's going to get summer, or at least spring here sooner. I hope. Well, next weekend is also daylight savings time.
Right. So you
we
can.
We spring forward.
Right. We spring forward. So we lose. Not wait. We gain an hour of sleep. No, wait.
No, we
lose an hour of sleep.
Yeah, because instead of it being 7 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock.
So you'll think it's 9 o'clock when you show up for the 10 o'clock opening of the pancake breakfast. But you know what?
No,
so
that
what?
No, that doesn't happen until Sunday. So, no, you can go
oh,
out and party
right.
and have a great time on Saturday, sleep in, and then when you get up, it's going to even be brighter out
That's
when you
right.
do get out. Now
that's
it's going
right.
to be.
So, yeah, absolutely. Please, please think about joining us. I know some of you would have to travel a distance, but I would love to see all our friends show up at the pancake breakfast and we'll all sit together and chit-chat. It would be great.
A bunch of folks.
It would be fun. It would be just fun. I don't care what anybody says.
Hopefully Buffalo will show up.
Yeah, the Buffalo contingent can show up.
Yeah.
And the
guy down from, what's that one town down in PA?
Pottstown. Pottstown. We have listeners all over the place, and we would love to see you all. You know, we have a map on our website. If you want to take a look at that, it's at soundbite.org/map.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say.
But that would be so great to see so many folks. And like I say, last year, it got very crowded. It got very crowded, and we're not joshing, folks, that you're going to want to get here. If you don't have your tickets, get here early so you can get in, get a seat, and enjoy all the fun.
Let's hope there's nothing else happening at the school that day.
No.
They've checked that
out.
Well,
not until later.
It's
going to happen later because that's why we can't do, like last year, we did do our show in the studio, but this year, because of scheduling conflicts, we'll be back here.
Now, I do not... expect to see our friends from Hawaii or Australia. I'll let you folks slide. And our
all right, they got plenty of time to get here.
And our friend from Beijing, I don't think we'll see that person. But there's a bunch of, if you look at the map, there's an amazing number of pins just in
maybe
in
Jim
Western,
and
New York,
Scott
and
would come up from North Carolina.
And of course, Dar from Toronto.
She could wander
Canada.
On down, day trip.
It's a day trip. So we'd love to see as many of you as can make it. We would love to have you join us. It's just $5 to get in the door, and it's all the food you can eat and all the camaraderie you can stand and more. So please join us. And of course, you can join us now by calling 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I have a...
The Muppets?
Exactly.
Dr. Teeth and the
I love that tune. It's so simple.
Yep.
It's so catchy.
I have a news item. Police don't need a warrant to search a cell phone from its number. A federal appeals court has ruled. The decision issued by the U.S. Court of Appeal for the Seventh Circuit stems from an Indiana case in which prosecutors used evidence the police found on cell phones at an arrest scene to convict a suspect on drug charges. Police had subpoenaed 3 months of each cell phone's call history to gather evidence on one of the defendants in the case, Abel Flores Lopez. Defense attorneys appealed their client's 10-year prison sentence, arguing that the police should have requested a search warrant before searching Flores Lopez's phone. They maintained that any evidence obtained from the phone company thus was the fruit of an illegal search and therefore should be ruled inadmissible. The three-judge panel was unpersuaded, likening the cell phone to a diary. It's not even clear that we need a rule of law specific to cell phones or other computers. If police are entitled to open a pocket diary to copy the owner's address, they should be entitled to turn on a cell phone to learn its number, they wrote in the opinion. So opening the diary found on the suspect whom the police had arrested to verify his name and address and discover whether the diary contains information relevant to the crime for which he's been arrested clearly is permissible. And what happened in this case was similar but even less intrusive, since a cell phone's phone number can be found without searching the phone's contents unless the phone is password protected, and on some cell phones, even if it is. The court offered up a scenario in which they said the defendant's associates conceivably could have learned about the arrest and remotely wiped the cell phones clean before the government was able to get a warrant permitting investigators to conduct a search. They described the authorities' ability to obtain the device's phone number quickly as a modest cost and privacy invasion. I'm not sure modest and cost go together with the term privacy invasion, but okay. Armed with that number, the officers could obtain the call history at their leisure, and the defendant does not deny that if the number was lawfully obtained, the subpoenaing of the call history from the phone was also lawful, and the history thus obtained could therefore properly be used in evidence against him, the judges wrote. So, do you think cell phone searches should require warrants? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Fritz did from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Fritz. What's your question?
Well, Nick, I noticed that it's easy to stub your toe in the tech world. The Azure service seemed to forget it was a leap year.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Microsoft's Azure service went offline for, most of a day?
Yes.
As it turns out, it was because they screwed up on leap day. It's their cloud platform, right? So you can,
yes.
And so you can do cloud, to the cloud. stuff. That's what Azure does. You can scale web applications through Microsoft's data center. It's the same thing that, Amazon and Google and 100 other places are doing. But Microsoft apparently forgot that Leap Day was there, and all of a sudden their servers were thinking it was March 1st, and the rest of the world was telling them it was February 29th, which did not compute, so they sat down and had a little cry for themselves.
And I noticed the Windows 8 has 10 different SKUs, supposedly.
Yeah, oh, I thought it was 9, but it could be 10.
Yeah, Windows 7 was like that, too.
Yeah.
So I imagine Dave is thrilled about that.
Yeah. You know, I honestly think there's a group of people deep within Microsoft who are Apple employees. And they sit around and say, how can we get Apple to shoot themselves in the foot next? I know. Let's have 10 different versions of Windows 8.
Yeah.
Although if they were smart, they would have 8 different versions of Windows 8 and 9 of Windows 9. And
there is so much uproar right now against Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
They sit there and say, you know, why mess around with something that's, you know, folks are very comfortable with? Well, it should do this and this and this. It's like, wait a minute. Maybe you should first talk to people besides programmers. Programmers get into their niche and they lose any reality of what's really going on.
Yep.
You know, and that's what we used to do back at Kodak. We'd sit there and talk to the end users and say, well, we're thinking
well,
of doing this.
Radical bastards over there. I'll
yeah,
tell
I know.
You what.
But, you know, I mean, to sit there and, like, getting rid of the toolbar, the startup bar.
Yep.
Talk of getting rid of that and just everything, making it look like a tablet.
Yeah,
it's going to look like a tablet. All the icons will be big squares.
Yeah, and they go,
hidden by
wait
the
a
Metro
minute.
Interface.
I don't need my kindergarten kids format. I'm an adult. Don't treat me like some imbecile.
I know.
Yeah, but you get a fish. And you get a nice fish, you know, a beta fish, I guess, on one of the screens.
I'll send them a real dead fish.
That's very nice. But, yeah, there's going to be, I heard 8 or 9. It might be 10. Who knows? I haven't played with it yet. I've just been so flipped.
Well, you know what? It's holding true. You know, don't go with that even one. It's every other one because Vista was bad. You know,
7
is good. 8 is bad. 9 should be good.
Maybe.
Yeah, I saw the stats this morning. It's still 45% XP and 38% Windows 7.
Yeah, corporations are resistant to change anyway and then forcing a new version every couple of years.
Well, the reality is that XP works. And if Microsoft just kept XP up to date, life would be good for all of us. The problem is when you already own 98% of the market, you have nowhere to sell to but your current base, and the only way you're going to sell to them is by changing the product.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gadget for Windows 7 that lists the XP support countdown date. But you can't run it on Windows XP. It only runs on Windows 7.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yep.
Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Yep.
Well, thank you. There's an interesting little program. It's an add-on for Chrome that puts a little calendar in the corner, and if you click on it, you get the full year or a month or whatever you've set it for. But you can also set a date in the future, and it'll count down to that date right in the bar of Chrome. And so I've been using that for various deadlines that I've got, so that works out nicely for me. But, yeah, I think it's going to be kind of ridiculous, but we'll see.
Yeah, we have 1,082 days of Windows XP support.
Well, that's not so bad then. That's a few years. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Still plenty of time to give us a call and chat with us, and I'll give you the numbers when we come back on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And our first caller is Mark from Livonia. Well, not our first caller. Our first caller for this segment.
Yes.
Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a couple questions on upgrading a Dell Optiplex 745. I want to put some more RAM into it. And it's got two sticks of 512 meg RAM. And my thought was to put two gig sticks into it, and they run at a faster speed. So should I pull the two smaller sticks out?
Well, wait a minute. Before you go doing that, you got to first check the specs for the system to make sure that it's going to be able to handle it and what speed chips it will handle.
I've got the spec sheet in front of me, and it says it handles these chips.
Okay. 2 gig?
2 gig chips.
Okay.
Well, one thing it says on it is that 800 megahertz DIMM's not available, but they are.
Well, the deal.
And I did check on a website that sells RAM, and they say that they're compatible.
Well, what'll happen is they'll run at the speed of the, if they are compatible, if they are indeed compatible.
Right.
And honestly, I would believe the manual over some website. But if they are compatible, they will run at the speed of the slowest stick in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want, if you really want a true system that's running as fast as it can go, pull the 2.5/12s and get rid of them. Throw in the 2.2 gigs and move on your way. What operating system are you running?
XP.
Then you can't use more than 4 gig anyway. So what
three
do you
gig?
Care?
3 gig won't.
Well, right. Yeah, right.
That's
won't,
why you, I figured pulling the 5.12 ones out wouldn't hurt anything.
Right. It's exactly right. It won't do. They don't do you any good whatsoever.
Yeah. So but putting faster RAM in doesn't do any good either. So if the RAM is designed to run at 800, and if you put 1,000 RAM in, it will run at 800.
Mm-hmm. Well, but he said it'll hold the sticks, but
yeah.
But if he's mixing sticks, he's mixing 800 and 1,300, for example.
Right.
You're going to end up everything running at 800.
Mm-hmm.
So pull the 2.5/12s and just run with the 2.2 gig sticks.
But the thing of it is, though, with XP, you might as well just keep 1.5/12, get a 2 gig stick.
Well, there could be memory interleaving issues. If you put pairs of RAM in, the memory can run faster.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's going to have a gig there that it won't utilize unless he goes up to
Windows
7.
Well, it gets 3/4 of a gig. It actually runs 3.2-something gig. I can't remember the exact number, but it's a little over 3 gig, and so he can use some of it, but you know what, that's fine when he moves. Mm-hmm. If he ever moves to Windows 7 or 8 or whatever, it'll use the full 4 gig.
One issue I have is I need to keep an XP machine because I have a 36-inch plotter that can only get drivers up to XP 4.
Yeah, so there's the other problem is people just have what they have.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, and that's very common, keep an old machine around to run the old hardware.
I had somebody come in that still has old Lotus and still has to be able to run some of the Lotus because of the formulas and everything else, the macros in it that he's used, you know, are built, and it needs to run it. So it doesn't need it anymore. It does everything he needs it to.
Yep.
The other question I had is I want to put a new graphics card in so I can support dual monitors. And can I put a PCI Express 2.1 card into a PCI Express slot? Will that work?
Yes, but I would think it unlikely that an XP machine has PCI Express slots. It probably only has PCI.
Well, again, it says that it does.
Double check.
It must have been a pretty late model then.
Yeah, double check.
They won't physically fit, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
The one problem I've sometimes run into the other way is that a PCI Express 2 card won't always work in a PCI Express 1 slot.
Right. Yep.
And so finding a PCI Express 1 card, if you only have a PCI Express 1 slot, can prove tricky. So if you find a new graphics card, you're going to have the XP driver problem again. You got to make sure you find one with XP drivers and make sure that it's backward compatible with the PCI Express 1 if that machine has it.
It says that it has a PCI-EX1 slot, PCI, two PCI slots, and one PCI Express X16 slot.
Okay. PCI-X is a different architecture again. So
there's three different types of slots.
They keep adding letters onto it.
Okay. The card that I was looking at says it's a PCI Express 2.1, I guess.
So you'll have to...
Right. So I'm not going to promise you that a 2.1 card will work in a 1.0 slot.
You'd have to check the detailed specs on that card.
And spending all that kind of money... I mean, you might want to just see about saving your pennies and going for a newer system.
Or check on eBay or Craigslist to buy an older video card from that vintage machine. It'll probably be cheaper.
Well, the card's not very expensive.
Well, if it doesn't work, it's too expensive.
Then it's real expensive.
Yeah,
exactly.
Check the return policy of the company you buy it at and see, and maybe even call them or check the specs page to see if it's backward compatible with PCI Express 1.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of the problems with... piecemeal upgrades. You tend to save a little money every time you do it. I mean, in the sense that you're not spending it all at once. But the reality is you don't always get the best of anything. And you make compromises. And if you pooled all that money together and spent it all at once, you'd get a much better machine with all newer pieces and parts.
And it's technology marching forward. You know, we started with older slots and then moved into PCI and then PCI-X, PCIe. And now we're starting to see newer and faster interfaces. The Thunderbolt interface is based partly on the PCI Express architecture. So Thunderbolt connections are extremely fast, 10 gigabits per second bidirectional.
Right.
And we're finally starting to see Thunderbolt accessories coming out.
Finally.
Yeah.
Well, that was true with Scuzzy, excuse me, Sexy. And
every time
something new came out.
Right.
Yeah, the connectors are available.
What
on
was the one that was terrible? ESA slots.
Were
terrible to use, and you had to load. You had to have drivers loaded before you could boot the computer.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Mm-hmm.
All right, our next caller is Lynn from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Hi. I'm hoping you can help me. I have a one-year-old laptop, and it's on Windows 7. Yesterday, I was looking at my webmail, and I got some message windows opening for the first time that I'd ever seen, which were small white windows with messages like message from web page, console, log, colon, Mike, note, colon, prod, console.log, colon, hey, expand, all in top capitals, and then ptela, P-T-E-L-A, and some numbers, open new, MT, H, colon, 130, et cetera, et cetera. So I got several of these messages, and I kept clicking to end them instead of saying, okay, I would X them out. After that, I noticed some changes. My computer started making a tick-tick-tick-tick-tick sound as if I had a key pushed down too long, but I didn't. And then it turned into a very loud-pitched sound, and I saw a new icon came up on my screen, which was, I think, the normal icon for a guest account. It's a brown briefcase, but I have set my guest account up with a different icon, and I never see it when I'm actually inside working on things.
Right. Lynn, it sounds like you've gotten hacked.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I did and where I'm at now. I went into safe mode. I downloaded Malwarebytes. I ran it, didn't find anything. And this morning, it turned itself on. And when I go to log on to the guest, it says Windows could not connect to the SENS, S-E-N-S service. Please consult your systems administrator. And I don't want to go to the other side where I have my systems administrator in case there is a virus or something going on. I don't want to give them free access. So I'm wondering what I should be doing next.
What you should be doing is unplugging your computer and bringing it to a reputable dealer and having them do a really thorough cleaning on that machine.
Because that hard drive has to come out of that machine.
Malwarebytes is not enough to clean that machine.
Yeah, it sounds like it needs to be cleaned from another machine.
Right, and although you could dance the entire security tango and that might help, your best bet at this point is to just take the machine to a reputable dealer. There are lots of people around like Dave who can actually take the drive out and put it in another machine and run all kinds of special diagnostics against it and clean it that way. And that's probably the safest thing to do at this point.
Okay, and the hacking to the best of your knowledge, that would not have come through the email that I had just opened.
It most likely did come from the email. One of the problems in using webmail is you're opening a web page. Mm-hmm. You're not really opening email. And that web page can have all kinds of code running in it. So you probably got some spam or some junk message, some message you opened. And it could have been a legitimate message from someone that you knew, and they are infected, and that code is passing along in the mail.
Okay, so instead of checking webmail, which I always thought it was safer than downloading it to my computer, because I thought I had my security settings so that my antivirus would check my incoming, any emails that were being downloaded.
It may not
have been a virus. It may have been a Java exploit. It may have been a SQL injection exploit. There's a lot of other problems.
There's two things, Lynn. First, if your antivirus is set to check all the email you download, that doesn't help when you're doing webmail, because in webmail you're not downloading the email.
Right, and that's why I thought it was protecting my machine, because I hadn't actually downloaded it.
Well, except you're opening it on the web, and a lot of these exploits now are web-based.
Okay.
And it depends on which webmail service you have. Some of them, you can select a message and delete it without opening it. So if you get something, for example, I get an awful lot of email with some form of Oriental characters. I don't know if it's Chinese, Japanese, I don't know.
I can do that with my service.
Yeah, so if you know it's not something that you want to look at, just delete it without ever opening it. That still doesn't stop you from some of the sneakier ones, but it makes you that much safer. But at this point, your job is to take your machine to a reputable dealer, have them pull that drive and clean it without booting it. That's how you get rid of a virus that may have taken over, a rootkit virus. and that will help. Make sure your antivirus is up to date. Make sure your malware is up to date. But some of those things only work when you are downloading your mail.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye.
A lot of times when you're using an email program like Thunderbird or some of the other ones, you can tell the email program to not display HTML code, which is a website. Because most email programs will still display websites in the mail. And by forcing the email into plain text only, you can stop those types of web attacks.
Well, and also by saying don't show pictures unless I say to.
Right.
And if you do those two things, you're much safer.
I was just looking on Gmail to see if there's a way to stop HTML display.
There is. You can turn off HTML, I think.
I'm looking for it somewhere in settings. That's what I'm guessing.
All right. While Steve does that, we're going to go to our next caller, Julie, who is making us all jealous because she's in Largo, Florida. Tell me it's miserable weather down there, Julie.
Oh, it's just absolutely terrible.
You're a lousy liar, Julie.
Yeah, I know.
But we still love you.
What I just wanted to know, number one, I'd love to come to the breakfast, but I need someone to deliver it.
You're right.
I tell you what, if you leave a ticket,
one of you guys can bring one down.
Well, if
I'll give you $10 for it.
Well, I'll tell you what, leave a ticket there, round trip at the counter, and I'll see what we can do about getting it down there.
Okay. Hey, I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
It's not a difficult one for you people, but it is for me. Earlier, you were talking about Total Recorder, because I'm still trying. I want to be able to record some of the shows on Jazz 901.
Yep.
You know, because obviously, I mean, I love the station, but 24 hours is a bit much. And some I would like to just record and play back later. And how can I do that? I found sound bites on how to do you. But I can't, like Otto. I want to listen to Otto, just in case I'm at the pool and I miss it.
Oh, well, you know, we're not going to help somebody who misses Otto because they're at the pool.
DAR.FM?
DAR.FM. There's a site called DAR.FM, and it lets you record radio stations.
Ah, DAR. Stevie, write that down.
Yep. You can
my other half.
You can do it with Total Recorder. You have to have the Jazz 901 website open and the radio stream playing, and then you tell Total Recorder start recording at 11 a.m. on Sunday, and it will start recording, and you tell it when to stop recording. So it's like a VCR in setting it to record. But
okay, now is there a price for that, or is this free?
Hold on, Julie. We got to take a break. Stay on the line, and we'll talk to you when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Julie from Largo, Florida, and all of you on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Julie from Largo, Florida on the line. Okay, Julie, there's two ways. Are you still there?
Yep.
Yeah. There's two ways to record Otto. One is with a Total Recorder, which we've already talked about, and you can schedule it, and you can do all of that stuff, and that all works.
Was it free?
Total Recorder is $15 to purchase it.
Yeah, okay,
it's
fine.
It's software.
And free upgrades, and I've had it since you turned me on to it. How long ago was
that? Yeah, 10 years ago, easily.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah, it might be a little more now. It might be $18 or $20 now, but it's still not much. For the standard edition, there's a professional edition and a video edition and et cetera, et cetera. But you don't need much more than the standard edition. Do everything you want to do.
Yeah.
So you can record that pretty easily. You can use that pretty easily. The other thing is at DAR.FM, and that lets you record the shows that you want. You have to become a member, but it's free. But then you play them through the website. If you use Total Recorder, then you have them as an MP3 file. You can put them on your media player and take them with you to the pool.
DAR.FM.
Yeah, DAR.FM.
And that's through Jazz?
Well, and when you get to DAR.FM, you can record anything immediately if you're sitting right there.
It lets you record lots of shows from lots of different stations.
Right, but if you join, and like I said, membership is free, but you have to join.
Yeah.
You can set schedule. So you can say, all right, now then you go search for our station, and you have to search by the call letters, which are WGMC. You search for the station, find WGMC, tell it you want to set a recording for whatever time Otto is on, and it will record it, then you can play it back later.
Oh, that's exactly what I've been looking for.
And now you got it.
I mean, I tried emailing, and I just bother everybody. And
until somebody tells you what you want to know. Sure.
Exactly.
Well, now you know.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, guys, and don't forget to bring down my breakfast.
Not a problem. Think of us while you're at the pool.
Just let me know when the ticket's going to be there at the counter, and I'll gladly, you know, schedule a few days. I don't mind going down.
Yeah, she hung up on you. She.
Yeah. Hey, I'd go down to Florida for a couple of days.
Sure, why not?
Do a little riding?
Absolutely. How are you going to get there? Were you going to put your bike on the plane?
No, Harley has what they call a fly-and-ride program. So all I have to do is find a dealership down there, and I can rent a bike. They'll supply me a bike by flying them. It's called fly-and-ride.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had arguments, not the right word. I got in trouble with my wife the other day.
Uh-uh.
She said some commercial for Disney World came on or something. We haven't been to Disney World in 10 years. So I said, there's a lot of places we haven't been to in 10 years.
Oh, boy.
And there's a lot of other places we'll never go to.
Oh, boy. You really have
humorous.
A death wish.
Where are you sleeping
really,
tonight?
You really have a death wish. I'm shocked.
Steve will now be at the Mac Shack.
Here's
or the Mac store 24 hours a day, because that's where he'll be living.
Here's how DAR makes their money. They have a pro account, which is $40 a year, and you can store 10 times more media. So you get more storage space to keep older shows.
Oh, so if you want to just listen to something and dump it, you're good. But if you want to keep older shows, I get it. That makes sense to me. All right, our next caller, George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Good afternoon, fellas. I have an idea I'm trying to develop for a nonprofit application.
Nice.
And I wanted to tap into the Soundbites Brain Trust.
Well, that's not going to get you far.
But basically, the application would be to take an audio recording with some still videos. And the audio might run perhaps 30 minutes, and be able to put it onto a tablet computer so that it can be played back by the user here would be an elderly person, probably not very well acquainted with computers, and would be very interested in the content of the sound and seeing a few of the still photographs. My question is there a brand of tablet that you can think of that would lend itself to this application where I presume I'm going to have to either myself or get someone else to do some programming?
Yeah, you can already do that with pretty much any tablet.
Well, but hear about what the special needs are. Because of the users, our experience has been that large buttons to start and stop might be very important. Is this already available in an app that already has that feature? Or
I don't know of one, but either an iPad or an Android tablet would do what you want. The important part really comes down to cost. We're starting to see Android tablets come out at ridiculously cheap prices comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so particularly if you don't need a lot of high-end stuff, just decent video, but not a lot of multitasking or that sort of fare. You'll shortly be able to get tablets in the $120 range that will be what you really need. So I would say get the thing started developing now. You know, it'll be an Android app, but you may not find the hardware to run it on at a cheap enough price for another couple of months.
I don't think the price of the hardware would be a barrier at the moment. We're not talking about very many units, maybe two or three or half a dozen. So if it were $300 to $500, that would be probably acceptable.
All right,
but I'm
most
interested in something that I can do the prototyping and kind of expand the capability. So I heard you talk about the Android.
Yeah.
Well, both the Android tablets and the iPad tablets can do that. And there are pre-existing programs for playing video and for editing editing slideshows into video. Creating your own app is doable on both platforms.
Now, our apps, can they be modified?
Absolutely. They're just programs. So the person who wrote them can modify them and upgrade them. So let's say you buy an Android tablet or an iPad, and you have a product that's in the iTunes store or the app market for Android, and then you update it, everybody who has downloaded that app will get a notice saying, oh, this app is now updated.
Okay. So I think it's the user interface, the more mechanical part of it, that has been the barrier.
Right. Neither product really has addressed the visually impaired market well. So if you're looking for something with huge buttons that are easy for the elderly or the visually impaired to see, you're not going to find much of that.
But you know, all of the platforms have a magnify option, so it'll take the existing buttons and make them bigger.
Right, but nothing that starts out that way.
But can you visualize being able to go in and modify a program such that large buttons could be offered on the screen?
Well, you can't modify anybody else's program. You have to write the whole program yourself, and then you can modify it yourself.
That was my earlier comment about being able to modify apps.
Yeah, you can modify an app that you wrote.
Yeah, only the ones you wrote.
But I'm talking about modifying an existing app.
No.
You'd have to ask that developer to do it.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, and can some of these controls be positioned outside of the app to connect and let the app operate subject to, say, larger controls for the device?
I'm not sure what you mean by that, I'm afraid.
You can connect external keyboards to all of the different tablets, and that would mirror the buttons on the app itself if you write it that way.
But I can't call, I'll take an example, I can't call the app as like I would call a subroutine. So I take control of the device, and then I'm ready to play the video, and I would call in then the video to play the file that's stored.
You would run a different app to run that video. So,
yeah,
so it sounds like you want to make multiple apps.
Most apps are independent. There is a product on Android called Vlingo where you can say it's a voice control thing. So you can say to Vlingo, play Hello. And if Hello is the name of an app, it'll run that app.
Ah, okay.
I
think you talked about Vlingo maybe back a month or two ago.
Right. And I don't know that Siri will run apps yet.
No, but if you click on a URL, that URL can open the App Store. It can open the video player. So if you click on a link to a video, say an email, it automatically opens the video player.
Right. Okay. But if he's talking about the visually impaired,
yeah,
he really needs something that's either voice controlled or completely automatic or has super large buttons, and that requires building that yourself.
Can I put one other little variation on the visually impaired?
Sure.
It may not be so much visually impaired in the standard sense as a matter of less confusing, more clear what the person needs to do, and so they only have, say, a choice of two buttons to press as opposed to having numerous controls. That seems to be with elderly people what's more of an obstacle.
Right. Again, anything you write, you can do, but there's no way to modify someone else's program.
Okay.
And the standard video controls on the iPad, at least, you get play, pause, next, previous, and volume, up, down. They're pretty basic controls.
And play, pause is a screen appearing button?
Yeah, everything is on the screen, yeah.
Okay. Great. So either of those you think would be equally...
At the very least, you should go to the various stores and take a look at what's already out there in the iPad and Android world and see what you like. We have to go, George.
Thank you very much.
We're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with us, and we thank you for having done so. We will be here next Saturday at the Pancake Breakfast starting at 10 a.m., and we hope to see many, many, many of you there. Not Julie. She'll be at the pool. But the rest of us will be there. And we want to thank you all. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Join us next week for the Pancake Breakfast right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week. Be safe.